This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Hidden Psychology of Pain, The Use of Understanding to Heal Chronic Pain. And the author is Dr. James Alexander. And Dr. Alexander joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Dr. Alexander.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Great to have you with us all the way from Australia. Let me read some about your book so we can expand on the title. You say this, people can overcome chronic pain as it is not the untreatable blight on modern life which the pain industry has led us to believe. In order to overcome chronic pain, sufferers need to delve into its causes in the form of psychological dilemmas, emotional distress, and other repressed unconscious material. Much more than physical. We always think, well, we take this pill and, you know, we get rid of it. Well, of course, we never get rid of it. It just kind of takes it away for a moment or longer. But you're talking about pain that just is always there, just never goes away.
That's correct. We need to distinguish between acute pain and chronic pain. And acute pain is the sort of pain that we feel after we've undergone an injury. So if we fall over, bang our knee or twist our ankle, then that's an acute pain. And the body generally takes anywhere between a couple of weeks through to 3 months to do the repair work required to fix that kind of pain, whether we're talking about soft tissue injury or even hard tissue injury. Whereas chronic pain is the kind of pain that lasts by definition for more than 3 months, and it can last for decades for people, and it just seems to never go away. So it's often called persistent pain. So that's the first point that we need to make, that there's a very big difference between acute pain and chronic pain. My book is addressing chronic pain, not acute pain.
Now, you experienced chronic pain for how long before you figured out how to get rid of it?
I experienced chronic pain myself for around 18 years, and I didn't get rid of that till I was in my late 30s.
So what was that situation or the pain? What was it coming from?
Well, I was nearly killed in a car accident when I was 18 years old. I was hit in a head-on car accident by a drunk driver, and I was driving a van. And the whole thing collapsed in on my legs, and I was trapped in the car for 2.5 hours with bones sticking out of my body everywhere and basically bleeding to death. Well, not quite to death, obviously, but bleeding profusely for apparently 2.5 hours before they could cut me out. And as you'd expect, that was quite a traumatizing experience. Both physically and emotionally. When I physically recovered from that, probably took around a year to physically recover, it wasn't long afterwards I developed an extreme pain in my left groin. It felt like a permanently torn groin muscle. And that pain stayed with me for the next 18 years. And as I said before, it wasn't until I was in my late 30s that I finally worked out what was going on with that. And during those 18 years, I tried a whole range of different physical therapies. I consulted with physiotherapists and chiropractors, and they each had their own theories as to what was causing the pain. They usually related it to what they presumed to be physical damage to my spine that I must have incurred in the head-on car accident. They suggested that my spine had been damaged in some way, and it was impacting on a nerve and shooting a referred pain into my groin. And so they tried a range of interventions that usually involved some kind of traction to pull the vertebra further apart, and, you know, a range of different kind of physical manipulations on my spine. The reality is that, unfortunately, none of those interventions worked at all. It wasn't unusual for me to find relief when I was receiving the treatment, but getting into my car in the therapist's car park, often the pain would come back. This is something like 5 minutes after I'd completed the treatment. And I experienced that pain for 18 years. Nothing really got rid of it. Occasionally, I could work out things that would help to ameliorate it a bit, but nothing actually ever got rid of the pain until I came across the idea that unconscious emotional or psychological factors can actually play a very large role in maintaining this kind of chronic pain over a long period of time.
So in your case, what psychological factor kept that pain just remaining with you?
Well, I was lucky enough to have a fairly blessed childhood, so I wasn't suffering from any traumas from childhood or my adolescence. However, of course, the fact that I was nearly killed in a traumatic car accident when I was 18 was a very significant factor. I remember when they wheeled me into the emergency department of a hospital after freeing me from the car wreck. When I was 18 years old, and there was a bunch of medical people buzzing around me, cutting off items of clothing, lifting limbs, assessing the damage. At that point, I put a lid on my distress. I remember starting to cry, and I noticed that quite a few of the medical staff around me were attractive young nurses, and I became embarrassed. And I put a lid on my distress, and I stopped myself from crying. And really, that was the way that I coped with the injury, with the whole trauma for many years, basically by putting a lid on it and pretending that the trauma wasn't there. And I think the effect of that really was to force it underground, you know, basically force it into a fairly deep unconscious level. And I proceeded to get on with my life, which was highly desirable. I didn't want to remain a victim for my whole life. And I decided as a result of my accident that I wanted to become a psychologist so I could help other people that had been traumatized by bad experiences like what I'd experienced. And I went ahead and went to university, did the study and the training required, and became a psychologist. So my desire to get on with life and to not be a perpetual victim, I think, was a very positive thing. However, the only way that I could really do that was by forcing the trauma underground or down to a very deep unconscious level, whereby I guess you could say I repressed it, I denied the trauma. It was almost like it was a bad movie that I remembered seeing from many years ago. And of course what happened to me was that I spent the next 18 years living with chronic pain in my left groin. And it wasn't until, as I said before, I was in late 30s that I came across the idea that unconscious emotional psychological distress, so upset which is occurring at a very deep level, much deeper for us to be consciously aware of, can actually be triggering and maintaining chronic pain. And for me, the obvious candidate in this was the trauma that I'd experienced as an 18-year-old, which I'd largely turned my back on and tried to pretend had not happened. And as I said, it had positive results in that it allowed me to get on with my life. However, I do think there was a cost attached to that. To that strategy, and I think that cost was that I experienced 18 years of living with chronic pain. Now, I know that this is what my chronic pain was about, as when I was 38, I came across this notion that psychological factors could contribute to chronic pain by a book called Spontaneous Healing, written by a physician named Andrew Weil. And in that book, he made reference to this possibility that psychological factors could be contributing to chronic pain. And I sort of investigated that idea further, and having a background in research, I started looking into this notion, and I managed to find quite a lot of literature, historical literature, in regards to this possibility. And the most recent of which was a professor of rehabilitation medicine at New York University Hospital by the name of Professor John Sarno. And I came across the books written by Professor Sarno, and I discovered that he had in turn picked up these ideas from a Hungarian psychoanalyst called Franz Alexander, no relation to me as far as I know, who became the chair of psychosomatic medicine at Chicago University in the late 1930s. And Professor Franz Alexander was working a lot with chronic illness and looking at psychological factors in chronic illness, not so much chronic pain, but more so with illness. Now, Franz Alexander had derived his ideas originally from the originator of psychoanalysis, Sigmund Freud. And, of course, we can even trace Freud's ideas going back further, the whole notion of there being an unconscious mind as a storehouse of the emotional flavour of all of our experiences goes right back, probably as far back as to the ancient Greeks and more than likely back to the indigenous cultures of Europe and many other parts of the world as well. So these ideas have been in our culture for a great deal of time, maybe forever. And when I started looking into this, I found that there's a great legacy of these ideas. And I started working with them, started really immersing myself in this possibility that the unconscious psychological factors could have a role to play in the causation of my chronic pain. And the real proof for me came when I was in my late 30s, I decided I was taking my family for a holiday with our children, and we were going back to the part of Australia where my car accident had happened to me as an 18-year-old, and I hadn't been back there since. And as it turned out, just purely by coincidence, it turned out to be we were going to be visiting the same place, the same area, on the anniversary date of my car accident, many years later, of course, in fact, 20 years later. And my children wanted to see the place where the accident had happened, and so I was going to take them to the accident site 20 years later, but it turned out that it was going to be actually on the anniversary date, which is purely a fluke. What sort of twigged me to this possibility was that for about a week before we arrived at the accident site, the pain in my groin became the most intense I'd ever experienced in the previous 20 years. It was so bad that I could barely walk, and I felt like I was simply dragging my left leg behind me. I was highly disabled, and it was the worst that I'd ever experienced it. When I was at the accident site, showing my family where the accident happened, a place where I hadn't died, the penny finally dropped for me that this is no coincidence, that the pain was at its most intense. I kind of at that point realised it was the anniversary of the accident. Mm-hmm. I was in the same part of the world, the same time of the year, the place where the most significant trauma I'd ever experienced had happened. And all of a sudden it became undeniable to me. The penny dropped. It became readily apparent that my physical pain was really just a physical manifestation of the emotional trauma that I'd experienced as an 18-year-old. And over the course of the next week, my pain gradually, bit by bit, went away. And I've never had it since, and that was about 12 years ago.
So the subconscious was literally like experiencing the accident all again at that moment.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, it makes so much sense, even to a layman like myself. I've interviewed authors who have been sexually abused as a child. I've interviewed soldiers who, of course, have gone through the horror of war. And they bring that pain, well, they hold on to that pain throughout their lives, and it can disrupt them totally. And it's an emotional, psychological barrier.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think that one of the things is that we both America and Australia, share a culture of being resilient and being optimistic and being positive. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And that's certainly what allowed me to get on with my life after I'd experienced my accident. And no doubt a lot of the soldiers in both America and Australia are much the same. So I don't want to suggest there's something wrong with wanting to get on with life. It's a really positive thing. However, I do think that it comes at a cost. And often when people have been highly traumatized, they do need to try to push the trauma away so that they can just face another day and keep on facing another day. But there is often a cost attached to pushing that trauma away. And the more that we do that, the more unconscious it becomes. We repress it and suppress it and force it down into an unconscious level. Now, just because we do that doesn't mean that the trauma actually disappears. It might disappear from our conscious awareness so we can focus on what we need to focus on to get on with life. But the act of suppressing trauma doesn't actually make it go away. And I think trauma is ubiquitous in our society. I think most people in varying degrees are carrying levels of trauma. There are the more obvious cases of trauma where people have been seriously violated in their childhood or teenage years or car accidents or war experiences and natural disasters. And then I think there's a whole lot of less obvious traumas that are basically part of our common experience.
Doctor, we have a couple minutes left. I want you to tell us how your book will help us get rid of the chronic pain.
Okay, well, the most important thing for overcoming chronic pain is information. And information really is power. We've been fooled to believe that chronic pain, as opposed to acute pain, we've been fooled to believe that chronic pain results from the biomechanics of our body going awry. And there's an enormous amount of research evidence which clearly demonstrates that this is not the case. However, as a culture, we've been fooled into believing there's something wrong with our body which produces chronic pain. The reality is that this is simply not true. Something else must be producing chronic pain, because a lot of the research suggests that it simply isn't faulty biomechanics of the body. When people become aware of emotional, hidden emotional and psychological factors which can produce chronic pain, then knowledge is power. And simply having that level of awareness, as I explained with my experience, having that level of awareness that there are emotional factors that are behind and producing chronic pain is often enough to help people to embark on a self-help process where they can begin to bring greater awareness within themselves around what could be producing their chronic pain, what aspects of their own personal backgrounds and lives could be producing that. And my experience of introducing these ideas to an enormous amount of people in the last 12 or so years has been that a great many people are also able to overcome their chronic pain through an increased awareness of what the psychological factors are that could be producing it. Now, everybody's different. Everybody's going to have different psychological factors.
Right.
So it's not a cookbook, but my book is essentially a self-help book which provides a lot of information to people. It dispels a lot of myths about what can be producing chronic pain. It presents good, accurate information about what are the likely causes of chronic pain in terms of psychological factors. And it takes people through a self-analysis process whereby they can answer a range of questions which I've built into the book, which will help people to review their own childhood experience and their adolescence experiences, get a sense of what could be their psychological factors, which relate to their own personal pain, and help people to then work through those experiences. It's essentially a self-help process, and because this is essentially based on information, people are very able to process and digest information for themselves. Now, there are times when information alone is not sufficient to do this. This is where people may be carrying significant trauma from extremely bad experiences. And I have quite a bit of information in the book about the best type of psychological approaches that can help people to overcome extreme trauma, which may be producing their chronic pain.
Well, Dr. Alexander, one of your reviewers says the book is easy to read and would be a benefit to professionals as well as to clients and patients, and then gives a testimony. I personally tried the techniques to manage arthritic back pain and found that they work. So you can't get any better than that. Dr. Alexander, tell us how to get your book, The Hidden Psychology of Pain.
Well, at the moment, you can get it through either of two websites. You can get it through my personal website, which is www.drjamesalexander, all one word, all lowercase, -psychologist.com. Or you can get it through www.thehiddenpsychologyofpain, all one word, .com.
Thank you so much, Dr. Alexander, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Word of God, God and Country, using the phrases of the Bible to convey God's message to a modern world and to a nation gone astray. And the author is Joseph Belinsky. And Joe joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Steve. It's an honor to be on your show.
Great to have you with us. And you're going to stretch our minds and get us to get outside the box that we usually, when we think about the Bible, and so often people have a hard time understanding the Bible. You say this about your book: organizing the phrases of the Bible to explain the Bible as it exposes the secrets of the beast of the book of Revelation, the biblical being commonly known as 666, can now be revealed. So first of all, Joe, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to write your book.
I wrote the book to share the answers to the biblical mysteries. 2,000-year-old biblical secrets are finally revealed. And these are the real answers. But the answers are not just given. There's a logical method used to reveal them. Because just being given an answer means nothing unless we understand the basic concepts and principles behind them.
When we look at, again, an overview of your book, why is this book so special?
The book is special because for 2,000 years, men have attempted to reveal the biblical mysteries. But not until this past half century has anyone had the historical references available to them, which we have today. No one knows historical references, and taking 2,000-year-old biblical phrases, which have been used to describe the past, and rearranging those phrases to clearly explain the present, exposes the secrets of the beast in the book of Revelation.
And of course, biblically, that's commonly known as 666. So how did you discover all this?
Well, let's go back to about the book itself. After people have read it, they ask, how did you do that? How did you think of this? And I didn't think of this. I actually found it in the Bible. Simply by reading the Bible, I found biblical stories written 1,500 years apart to be cleverly intertwined and associated to each other through certain phrases or thoughts. And there are many biblical stories and paragraphs which appear to have been written just so that one certain phrase stands out. There are also numerous stories where similar phrases seem interchangeable or where a particular phrase or question did not initially seem to fit. An analogy to that is sometimes you hear a line in a movie and you think, is this why this movie was made? Was this line the purpose of this movie? And quite a few phrases embedded within the biblical stories gave me this feeling of perception. So like secret passages hidden throughout the house of God, these unique and individual phrases were then grouped together and rearranged in this form new and enlightened perspectives on their meanings.
What would you say was the most challenging part about writing your book?
The most challenging? It was more than a decade of uncovering, writing, and trying to get these answers made known. When you're not a well-known author or a famous celebrity, then it's difficult. The most fun and rewarding? Writing the book was actually more of a journey. Reading the Bible and uncovering biblical phrase after biblical phrase which seemed associated to each other, or which seemed to mean something other than what the message of the biblical story was initially conveying, actually caused the Bible to become viewed as a code book full of secret messages. And this evolved into arranging those mysterious phrases together, and as they came together, fascinating and unexpected lessons were learned. Some of the lessons actually began to build upon the previous learnings, which thus gave rise to new insights, but some are quite puzzling and prompted further investigations, like wondering why God would care about our laws, our courts, and our history. And these rather bewildering questions caused me to pursue paths never expected, and attaining answers never imagined.
What would you say was the most controversial aspect of your book?
Well, there's quite a few. Number one, what we discussed before, the beast is revealed. Politics and religion come together. Our laws and the Bible do mix and must go hand in hand. And we may not all see it, but our country is currently divided. And to survive, what we will discover is that we must indeed become one nation under God and indivisible. We say this, and it's time that we mean it.
And your book, relevant to current news topics?
Absolutely. This is true reality. True reality. That's a tongue twister.
And what about specific problems or challenges that your book can solve?
Well, there's quite a few. Politics versus religion, free speech, America's freedom and values.
And why would you say, Joe, your book is coming out right now?
Well, for over a decade, I had difficulty getting any attention to it. Perhaps it wasn't time for the answers to be known, but it's now time for the answers to be known. Our country has wandered off path for too long, and with our current economic crisis, the upheavals, the religious wars around the world, and the environmental catastrophes hitting us, there's no better time for this to be accomplished.
And what do you think we as the readers, what can we gain from your book?
Well, basically all of us together, our future. We can't continue to head down our present path. Biblical answers are made known, and this book gives the people of our country a chance to save ourselves.
Are these rearranged phrases really how God would see us now?
Thank you for asking that. This is important. This is not taking phrases and interpreting them. This accepts the actual biblical phrases God gave us, which have been used to describe the past, and rearranges them to clearly explain the present. To see our present world in God's eyes, we must realize that our modern world is really no different than what was in the past.
Joe, who does your book appeal to and why?
And Steve, the book is actually for everyone. The answers are something that everyone should know. The book contains and explains the answers to the biblical mysteries, and there's no doubt that these are the correct answers.
And what makes your book so different on this subject matter?
Well, from what I've found, these answers are not available anywhere else, nor does anything else come close in attempting to explain the Bible in this manner.
What would you say qualifies you to write this book, Joe?
Well, I had difficulty getting this published because I had no previous books written. I was also not considered an expert in the field, and I did not have a big-time recognizable and famous name. But I do have the answers that the experts, the famous, and the previously published authors have never figured out. And that's why this book was made available.
The title of the book is The Word of God, God and Country, Using the Phrases of the Bible to Convey God's Message to a Modern World and to a Nation Gone Astray. And the author is Joseph Belinsky. Joe, tell us how to get your book.
The Word of God, God and Country. It's available now from Westbow Press, W-E-S-T-B-O-W Press, at www.westbowpress.com. You can also order through your local bookstore or preferred online retailer. It's available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble as an ebook, soft cover, and hardcover.
Joe, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Steve, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreek, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole O'Dell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole O'Dell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Tune In, and the author is Richard Farnsworth. And Dick joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Dick.
Steve, how are you?
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a better man just thinking about, wow, I wish I had this kind of power that this young man in the book has. That'd be neat.
Wouldn't that be great?
And we're going to find out about the power that Rod has, this main character, Rod Harris. But first of all, let me just kind of explain some of that. I'll read a few things you've written about your book. You say this. This is a book about a young man who has been given a remarkable gift from God, an endowment of power that allows him to tune machines, animals, humans, subsequently restoring basic internal functions and cheating death of its hold on them. The young man's rapid transformation from boyhood to manhood, primarily as a result of this power, weaves a narrative that will intensify until the very end and which will leave you satisfied as you read the epilogue and finally set the book down. It is a page-turner.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's the way it should be. And, you know, obviously something like this, kind of pushing the envelope right to the very limit, and it's enjoyable. Let's find out, though, first, let's find out, Dick, about you and how you came up with this idea.
Well, I've always had a knack for writing, but I've never considered a book before. I've been in business, and so I've written business letters and proposals and that type of thing. I retired about 10 years ago. In the last couple of years, I've had some spare time, and so I started writing just for fun. And it's interesting. I would, in the middle of the night, I would wake up with ideas about the book, and so I'd write them down, and then I'd later integrate them into the dialogue. And so the story started to develop, and as it developed, I started to live it. I felt the thing growing, and the reason that I decided to publish, I had several people read the manuscript, and they encouraged me to go ahead. But then finally, after I finished the book, my wife finally read it, and she loved it. And I remember we were taking a trip to Ohio, and she, I had a captive audience. I gave her my book, and she read it. We got to the motel, and she was up till like 3 o'clock in the morning to finish it. So I said, I'm going to go ahead with it. The idea is, I think everybody, in 1 Corinthians it talks about spiritual gifts, and I think everybody has a spiritual gift, and if they don't develop it, it just wastes away. And so the idea of spiritual gifts came to me, and I was particularly interested in the healing process. And so I just integrated that into the book, and there it is.
This special gift of healing, as you put it, can tune the bodies of people and animals, even machines?
Yeah, Yep, that's how it all started. the story developed. Actually, the prologue of the book, which was written by his friend Andy Spooling, is one of the scenes I think that should capture the attention of the readers right off the bat. Rod Harris and Andrew Spooling met at an airport in Iowa. Now, Rod is a 20-year-old farm boy right off the farm. Has never been in a big city before. Andy is a talented architect. He's not much older, but he's an up-and-coming architect. Well, Andy's in the airport trying to work on a major project, and he's completely frustrated because he's trying to work on his project on his laptop computer, and he can't get the laptop to work. So Rod sees his frustration, offers to help. He takes the computer, he turns it upside down, and he taps rhythmically on it with his index fingers for a couple of minutes, hands it back to Andy, and it's working better than it ever has before. And so Andy immediately forgets about his project, and he starts to devote his attention to learning about this young man. So that's how the story starts. That's the prologue.
Well, that's a great way to start. That'd get all our attention in today's high-tech world. We need Rod around every one of us.
You betcha.
Now, when does Rod discover that he has this special gift?
At the very beginning, he and his father are on their way home, and they run into a terrible storm. And the old truck stops. And so Rod, he just has a feeling. And he gets out of the car. He's probably 10 years old at the time. Gets out of the truck, opens the hood, and he starts tapping on the block. And the truck immediately starts to operate again. He puts the trunk down and they drive home. The second thing that happens is when they're home, the cow is in the field. Gets struck by lightning. And falls over and is dying, and Rod goes over and he starts to tap on the spine of the cow and up around the heart area, and he revives the cow. The cow gets up and subsequently has several calves, and he restores them. So this is how it started. This is how he found out about the gift.
Is this kept a secret, or does his fame spread wildly?
Well, it doesn't spread wildly because one of the considerations with this great endowment of power that he has, this extraordinary gift, is that he has to maintain secrecy. He can't just let it be common knowledge because he fears, and rightly so, he fears that if that happens, he'll lose the gift. And so, he keeps it close to the vest.
But obviously, there are those who know about this. It'd be hard to keep that a secret.
But when he performs this, this procedure, he generally makes sure that anybody involved is sworn to secrecy. So he has several friends that he develops over the years, but they're all obligated to keep this close to the vest, and they do. It doesn't get out. There's no national newspapers that are printing stories about it.
But his mom has terminal cancer.
Yeah, she's airlifted to a hospital in Dallas, and that's where Rod is going when he runs into Andy. He's going to fly to Dallas to take care of his mom, and so he gets there. He does this procedure on his mother, thinking maybe he'll give her a little time or at least a little comfort. Well, it turns out that she's completely healed. One of the scenes that's really interesting, it's the second big scene in the hospital, I think it's in the second chapter, when Rod has, after a couple of days, completed the healing of his mother, who, as I say, was hours away from death with terminal cancer. The chairman of the oncology department, who is Dr. Sage Russell, enters the hospital room while Rod is in there with his mother, and he invites him to accompany him to his office. Following an interview, and you can imagine how interesting that interview would have been, and overwhelmed by Rod's character, he's such a fine young man, Dr. Russell asked Rod to perform a healing on a young boy who is also in the same situation as mother was, is close to succumbing to a terribly painful and a rare form of cancer. You know, the doctors refer to it as a cannibal cancer because it's just, you know, it's just so virulent. Now, this young man's the only surviving child of parents who lost another son about a year earlier to the same the same type of cancer, the same illness. Now, at first, Rod's reluctant because, as you as I explained, he doesn't want to get this information out to everybody. But quickly, he gives in to the request to Dr. Russell because Dr. Russell realizes, you know, what's going on, and he swears that he'll never reveal any of this. So anyway, they go into the boy's room, and in two sessions, he completely heals this young boy. And of course, you can imagine the parents' reaction to that. They don't know that he did this. They don't know how it happened. They just know that the boy was healed. But anyway, this is the kind of young man Rod is. He can't avoid taking the opportunity to heal these people that are struggling. So now there are other pivotal scenes which are even more dramatic than this. But these are the two that I think provide the foundation for the narrative that follows.
Now, what kind of impact does Nurse Amy Rollins have on him?
Well, without giving the story away, Nurse Rollins walks in on him when he is working on his mother, and she sees what's happening, and Rod sees her, and he just kind of puts his fingers to his lips and encourages her to just wait, and he finishes the procedure, and then he explains to Amy what happened. And of course she's sworn to secrecy at the same time. The story develops with Amy. Amy happens to be from the same hometown that his aunt and uncle live in, and it's Liberal, Kansas. And as a matter of fact, their aunt and uncle is taking care of his three sisters while his mother is in the hospital. Anyway, this relationship with Amy Rollins develops, and what happens there is extremely interesting. And I'm not going to give you any more except to say that he ends up marrying Amy, and their relationship is a wonderful relationship which develops over the years.
You say that along the way, Rod encounters absolute highs and miserable lows, but at the same time, he achieves a balance in his life that most people never reach. So you're setting him up as a model, really in a realistic way, even though he has this obviously fictitious kind of power.
Yeah. Well, it turns out that this power, and you don't get into this until the end of the book, it turns out that this power is a generational thing. It's someone's had it before him and someone will have it after him, and he's kind of responsible for making sure that that happens.
Must be another book coming.
Actually, there is, but it's not connected to this. This actually concludes. And I think people will love the ending. I think it's absolutely wonderful. But, it sounds like it's all bright and airy, but there are some dark scenes in the book. I won't go into that, but I think I put them in just to balance it. You can only take so much sugar. there's got to be a little opposition, and it's in here. It weaves through the story very nicely, but it did need that balance, and I hope that I did it right.
And even that life exists after death.
Yes, and that's I'm not going to go any farther with that one because it's I think people need to be exposed to this kind of thing, and they are in this book in a marvelous way, I think.
Well, I think it's important for all of us to discover our gift, right, and realize that we can develop that gift and we can do great things in our lives.
Well, yeah, and as I said before, I think everybody has this gift, and if they don't develop it, it just goes away. I have a couple myself, and I and it means a lot to me. One of the gifts I have, one of the spiritual gifts, is the gift of believing and of faith. It's very strong with me, and I don't think it's, and I think it's something that I was given as a gift, and I think other people have that and have other gifts as well. You hear about the gifts of tongues and the gifts of healings. You know, they're there. It's just, they just have to be developed.
So your book isn't written to frighten any of the readers or titillate. It's just an adventure, but at the same time, it has this great theme.
Yeah, it has this great theme, and the other thing that it has is it has a young man who has integrity, and who is honest, and who is loving, who is has a strong family relationship, even though initially the family was kind of a dysfunctional situation with an abusive father. But once he's out of the picture, the family pulls together, and it's a wonderful thing to see.
Title of the book: Tune In. And the author is Richard Farnsworth. Dick, tell us how to get your book.
It's available online through BarnesandNoble.com, through Amazon.com, and through BalboaPress.com. I think you can also order it directly from Barnes & Noble if you go into one of their stores. It's available as a hard copy, as a paperback, and as an ebook. And I tell people locally that if they want to buy the ebook, that's fine, but I can't sign the ebook. If they want me to sign their book, they have to get a book. So those are the rules.
Those are the rules. Well, Dick, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Steve, thanks very much. Good talking to you.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.